today on Annenberg Radio News.
Luckily, the rain sort of died down the smell of vomit and beer, which is a common smell.
The awe-inspiring party known as Mardi Gras has taken a hold of the city of New Orleans, and we take you straight to the carnage. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, March 4th, 2013. I'm Ani Ukar. The Los Angeles City Council voted unanimously today to ban the use of electronic cigarettes. As Alexis Mason reports, about a dozen people showed up to vent their feelings on the matter.
Paul Hirsch is a principal in the Los Angeles Unified School District. He was a little nervous, but locked and loaded to argue in favor of banning the practice known as vaping.
I come before the council to urge you to pass this measure and to help keep e-cigarettes out of schools because they are showing up in our classrooms. Vape shops are opening up around our campuses. And it's hard for me to believe that we're even having a debate about nicotine. It is a dangerously addictive substance.
E-cigarettes are battery-powered devices that simulate tobacco smoking by vaporizing a liquid solution. Some solutions contain a mixture of nicotine and flavors. There are others that are nicotine-free. The measure bans use of e-cigarettes in bars, nightclubs, restaurants, and other public areas. Ruben Gonzalez from the LA Area Chamber of Commerce is not quite ready to snuff out e-cigarettes.
Where years ago we found that there was that evidence, conclusive evidence, that there was a necessary public benefit to regulate individual action, that is not yet the case here. When we heard the testimony earlier, we heard there's a lot of maze, there's a lot of might be's, there's a lot of, well, we don't have all the evidence yet.
All the evidence might not be in. But Marlene Gomez of the American Lung Association argues there is enough.
Initial studies have found formaldehyde, benzene, and tobacco-specific nitrosamines, which are cancer-causing chemicals, coming from the secondhand emissions. It is clear that there is much to be learned about these products, but it is also clear there is much more than just water vapor coming from the secondhand emissions of e-cigarettes.
Others who argued in favor of the ban said it was better to take precautions. The council agreed and voted 14-0 to approve the ordinance that prohibits vaping at places where lighting up is banned. Vaping lounges and stores will be exempted from the ban, just like exceptions are made for cigar and hookah lounges under tobacco smoking regulations. Alexis Mason, Annenberg Radio News.
Traffic has returned to normal after a collision involving a metro train this morning. Just before 10, a minivan struck a Blue Line metro train in downtown Los Angeles. Here's Mark Lippman, a spokesperson for Metro.
It appears that the minivan ran a red light and struck the train. So, but at this point, it's still under investigation. We do know that, 13 people claimed injuries.
Lippman says two of those injuries were serious, 10 were fair, and one person declined treatment. He also says most metro collisions aren't as catastrophic as people expect, since trains traveling on street level operate at lower speeds. The electronics store Radio Shack announced today it's closing 1,100 stores throughout the country. Sean Birch takes a look at what's behind the cutback.
It's estimated that 90% of the U.S. population lives within 5 miles of a Radio Shack. But that appears to be changing, with the company announcing today it would be closing 1,100 of its 5,200 stores nationwide. Sales were abysmal last quarter, with revenue down 19% even with the holiday shopping season. Investors also ran away from Radio Shack today, with the company's share price closing down 17%. One place they're not closing is South LA, where stores near USC will remain open. Here's one customer at Radio Shack at University Village.
It's mainly for convenience. Okay. It's just so close, and whatever I need to pick up something like a charger or a HDMI cable usually come for such things when I lose them or break them.
Another customer, Brian Fuente, bought music equipment at the store.
They're nice. They're cool people. They got good customer service. You know, yeah, I got my wire. Got to go set up my studios, my little session right here. You get me?
Going forward, CEO Joe Magnaca says the company will start focusing more on mobile phone sales. It's unclear how many employees will lose their jobs, but many are expected to be transferred to other stores. Sean Birch, Annenberg Radio News.
President Obama released his budget proposal plan to Congress today. The plan calls for $300 million to expand two border crossings between California and Mexico. Michaela Wickham reports on how it might affect people in Los Angeles.
President Obama's budget plan for 2015 includes a variety of items, from what the minimum wage will be to what coins are made out of. According to the White House, the budget would raise taxes for wealthy people. It would lower taxes for nearly 14 million Americans. That's about 5% of the country. The president made a push to raise the federal minimum wage to $10.10 per hour. I spoke with Democratic Congresswoman Karen Bass, who represents parts of South and West LA. She says the budget plan will help low-income communities in her district.
He's also calling for resources for universal preschool. He's calling for job training money. So it's a very exciting budget. Now, of course, I hope that my Republican colleagues can get on board in some form or fashion.
However, some critics of the president's plan say federal programs to help low-income communities are not beneficial. Republican Congressman Paul Ryan released a report yesterday saying anti-poverty programs should be changed because they don't motivate people to get out of poverty. Congresswoman Bass sees the federal initiative known as Promise Zones as a way to help communities raise their income. Promise Zones are a White House program to help underprivileged communities become eligible for federal grants to improve their surroundings. Five L.A. neighborhoods already became eligible for Promise Zone money in January. South L.A. was not one of them, but Congresswoman Bass hopes that with the president's budget, that will change.
I'm thrilled by the resources that he is putting in, and very specifically in regard to South L.A., as he's calling for the establishment of 40 more Promise Zones. And so that could really increase the possibility that an application from South L.A. would be successful.
Some of the top spending in the president's budget plan went to health, education, and gun control. Now, the House and the Senate will have to analyze, debate, and decide how much of the proposal they'll stick with. Michaela Wickham, Annenberg Radio News.
Most Americans eat more protein than they should. That's according to a new study by researchers at USC. The study tracked thousands of adults for nearly 20 years. It found that for middle-aged people, eating too much meat, cheese, or animal proteins can increase the risk of cancer almost as much as smoking cigarettes. Joey Wong brings us more.
Meat, milk, and cheese all sound healthy for the body, but USC professor of gerontology Walter Longo found out these foods can increase your chances of dying from cancer. Longo's study shows middle-aged protein lovers are four times more likely to die of cancer. He says Americans are getting 16% of their diet from protein.
It's way too high, right? For something that is not needed, right? No growth, no reproduction. What are they pushing for? So this is why the proteins are not necessary at those levels.
Longo also says the main problem is animal protein. This is why Americans should adjust their diet and get most of their protein from plants. The study gives new insight into the protein-heavy paleo diet. People who are on this diet believe it helps with weight loss. Charles Olalia created the paleo meal at LA restaurant Patina.
It's a high-fat, no-gluten diet, high on meat, zero starch as much as possible.
Olalia says the inspiration for his paleo menu came from his friends who do CrossFit training and feel that protein helps them build muscles. He says protein is still an important part of our diet and doesn't seem too concerned about the study.
Everything has to be in balance, you know. Like I've seen some of the CrossFit people how they eat. They eat mounds of butter, but they can do this because the output they do is so much higher than, for example, the mid-40s, mid-50s people.
But after completing the study, Walter Longo encourages most Americans to think twice before biting into that hamburger. Joey Wong, Annenberg Radio News.
If you're doing this or this, you may be part of the lingering flu season. As Christina Savon found, it may tell us something about where you live.
As of last week, the number of people who died from flu-related causes in California rose to 302. Cynthia Kraft, a reporter for the Sacramento Bee, actually ran a story this morning about how population density and income are related to flu.
And what we found was that the most concentrated flu cases and the worst flu cases actually occurred in a very high poverty area where people of various ethnic backgrounds live.
But why exactly are highly populated and unemployed areas, like South LA, hit hardest by fatal flus?
Impoverished areas, people tend not to have health insurance.
Not to mention,
they tend to have to rely on public transportation, which means that they are exposed to more communicable diseases.
So what are some preventative tips for this season?
Everybody should get a flu shot. There are people who say that the flu shot will make you sick. Certainly won't make you as sick as the H1N1 virus. And everybody should wash their hands frequently.
And if you really do feel sick, Kraft says, head for your doctor and hit him up for some antiviral medication. Christina Savon, Annenberg Radio News.
The rain has moved through the LA area, but the cloudy skies are still here, at least until the weekend. We'll be hitting a low of 54 degrees tonight, but we'll pick back up to the low 70s tomorrow and Thursday. Later on Annenberg Radio News, the saucy scenes of 50 Shades of Grey have made the move to the stage, and we take a look at whether the stage version is worth all the fuss of the original. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu arrived in LA today for the premiere of an Israeli film. However, his real focus is on Silicon Valley, which has invested heavily in his homeland. But as Camille Riquesas reports, his visit comes amid a growing global boycott against Israel.
Netanyahu heads to Silicon Valley tomorrow to meet with tech giants like Google, Facebook, and eBay. They have a lot in common.
Tel Aviv is the number two hub for innovation in the world.
Janine Zakaria is a visiting lecturer at Stanford University with a specialty in the Middle East.
So for companies here who are looking for the next best thing, the Israelis have had a couple really big ticket sales. And so I think there's an understanding here in the Valley where it's no secret that there's a lot of good Israeli innovation, smart, and California's tech industry wants to tap into that and partner to that.
He arrives as demands are growing for a boycott against Israel. Zakaria says the Silicon Valley visit is strategically planned to steer the media's attention to Israel's technology partnerships with U.S. companies.
Coming here to Silicon Valley really offers him an opportunity to frame the discussion on Israel the way he wants to, namely about Israeli business, Israeli tech, Israeli expertise, drum up business for Israel, and sort of define Israel the way he wants to as the, quote, startup nation.
Netanyahu said he is confident the value of these partnerships will outweigh the boycott. The effort to economically isolate Israel is part of the so-called BDS movement, or Boycott, Divest, and Sanction, where pro-Palestinian groups are campaigning for a boycott on Israeli products. Esty Chandler of Jews for Peace in Los Angeles says she is more concerned with the meeting Netanyahu will have with the governor of California tomorrow.
I believe that there's some sort of an agreement, a memorandum of agreement that they're signing. I am very concerned about us entering into such agreements when we know that there are human rights violations.
She believes the boycott movement will make even major companies think twice before doing business with Israel. But Zakaria says the boycott is not strong enough to dislodge global business interest.
See, for example, you know, Facebook buys another Israeli app. I don't see the BDS movement strong enough, at least for now, to really turn, you know, to make an impact, to start just a campaign against Facebook because they acquired an Israeli entity or something like that.
Zakaria expects a positive outcome tomorrow. There are powerful incentives for Israel to do business with technology heavyweights. Camille Riquestas, Annenberg Radio News.
Secretary of State John Kerry visited Ukraine today and offered the country $1 billion in loans. But is that enough to get Ukraine back on its feet? I spoke with the director of USC's School of International Relations, Robert English. He's a specialist on Russian and former Soviet Union politics. I asked if Ukraine would be capable of standing on its own without Russian involvement in its economy.
No. Ukraine is in such a horrible situation economically, facing default on its debts in the near future, that it really needs a rapid infusion just to survive another 6 months of at least $10 billion, maybe more like $15 billion. So somebody is going to have to come to the aid of this crippled economy, whether it's Russia or the European Union and the U.S. or some combination of outside wealthy benefactors.
Speaking of foreign aid, what would you say these Western powers need to do in order to most effectively support Ukraine?
Well, here's the dilemma, because what set the protesters out on the square in the first place wasn't so much the details of some deal with the European Union or some trade pact with Russia. It was the corruption and misery and low living standards in their daily lives. They want improvement. They've waited for over a decade, and things just stumble along in this awful condition. Now, with the revolution and all the chaos, things are only getting worse. The value of the currency is plummeting. Investment is fleeing the country. So whoever's going to rescue Ukraine not only has to fork over an enormous amount of money, but has to demand reforms so that in the future, Ukraine can pay its own bills. The problem is those reforms are really going to hurt. The first thing Ukraine has to do is stop subsidizing energy, which is ridiculously cheap in the country. And therefore, people are very wasteful. Industries are very wasteful. And that's going to hurt. That's going to mean job cuts. It's going to mean higher fuel prices for ordinary people. It's going to mean a very cold winter.
How significant is Russia to the Ukrainian economy?
Russia is vital to Ukraine's economy and has a, you know, an extraordinary amount of influence, even ownership of various assets. As I said, Ukraine relies heavily on sharply subsidized supplies, mainly of natural gas, which is in fact the kind of drug that's allowed Ukraine to continue stumbling along without reforms. Russia is heavily involved in the Ukrainian economy, and Russia is probably Ukraine's most important trade partner.
What would you say then is the biggest economic risk that Ukraine faces by pulling away from Russia?
That they'll lose these subsidies. That they'll have to confront right now at the worst possible time on the edge of default with people so dissatisfied with the corruption and cronyism and inefficiency that they'll take to the streets in a heartbeat. This is an explosive situation, quite apart from the ethnic dimension. Every ordinary citizen in Ukraine is fed up with the horrible conditions. And now if they're going to cut off, wean themselves rapidly away from dependency on Russian energy supplies, there's no substitute coming from the Western side, only a long, hard path of reform. So this possible breaking of ties with Russia, an attempt to rapidly join Europe, will come at a tremendous social cost and likely more political instability.
That was Robert English, director of the USC School of International Relations. Beads are being tossed and beers tossed back all over the world today. It's Fat Tuesday, or as they say in Francais, Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras marks the beginning of Lent for Christians everywhere, but one place has laid claim to the holiday unlike any other. Graham Clark spoke with one reveler in New Orleans.
My name is Matthew Lewis, and I am standing on the balcony of Mimi's in the Marigny. Just outside the French Quarter, it's like a local spot. You know, I had a bunch of beer. I'm hanging out. I'm dancing. I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, from Mardi Gras.
Can you tell me what it looks like, what it smells like, what it feels like to be in the Mardi Gras crowd?
It's totally something you can't really explain. So many wasted people at like 10 o'clock in the morning. It's pretty impressive. Luckily, the rain sort of died down the smell of vomit and beer, which is a common smell of Mardi Gras. This is my second year here, and I've really got a different understanding for how Mardi Gras works. It's like 4 weeks long. So, you know, it started like a month ago, and we've all been hanging out since then. And two, Mardi Gras day starts at like 7 o'clock in the morning. pretty impressive.
Can you describe your favorite costume? Did you any costume that stood out for you? Any one image that maybe stood out for you so far?
Best costume I've seen so far was this dude that had on like a horned mask, and he had like contacts in, so his eyes were yellow, and he was super creepy.
Is there anything else you want to say?
New Orleans is the best city in the world. I don't know why everyone doesn't live here. I don't know why everybody that I love doesn't live right here, right now.
That was Matt Lewis coming to us live from Mardi Gras in New Orleans, Louisiana. Come on, baby, let the good time roll. For more information on Mardi Gras, including what's going on in LA, visit neontommy.com or annenbergradio.org. The Annenberg Radio News, I'm Graham Clark.
Celebrations and parades have broken out in Los Angeles. Besides a bevy of bars, Amoeba Records in Hollywood is hosting a series of bands right now, building up to mass performance of When the Saints Go Marching In. 50 Shades of Grey changed the way we look at handcuffs forever when it became a bestseller in 2011. The story of power and lust is now coming on stage across America. Arts and culture reporter Samir Suri has found out more about this kinky musical with help from the theater critic Emily Zakor.
My name is Emily May Zakor. I'm a staff reporter for the arts and culture section of Neon Tommy.
Emily is here discussing an interview she did in Neon Tommy with the actress.
Her name's Tiffany Doucette. She's an actress who plays the character Pam in 50 Shades the Musical, which is a stage adaptation of 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, my mom definitely wasn't too thrilled about it. She's more on the conservative side.
The audience response is really interesting, especially because she sort of referred to it as a cult following. So in each city that she goes to, she sees a lot of middle-aged women who are fans of the books, and they sort of bring their husbands along and act a bit ridiculous.
We had some ladies that were throwing panties on stage at our Christian Grey, and that was a first for all of us.
A lot of the women would come with, like, costumes and props. They would come with riding crops and masks and gray ties. And so I think they sort of understood that it was a little bit playful, you know. It was, like, a little bit more of a joke than how the books actually were.
The book, as you said, attracted a substantial cult following, but it also attracted a lot of controversy over some of the women's issues presented about BDSM. And did the show encounter some of the same criticisms?
Well, what's actually really interesting about the show is that while it is technically a stage adaptation of 50 Shades of Grey, it actually is more of a parody. So the way that Tiffany described it is that the creators of the musical sort of took a lot of the criticisms of the book series and then parodied it in order to make a really funny comedic version of the books.
There are certain parts of it that are improvised and just, you know, fly by the seat of your pants with comedy. So that's something that I've been kind of working on, watching my fellow actors who are more comedians and improvisers, and kind of trying to learn from them and seeing what I can take away from them.
It's going on at the Kirk Douglas Theater right now, and it's just got extended until March 30th.
Great, it was lovely to talk to you today.
Thank you. It was lovely talking to you, too.
Samir Suri, Annenberg Radio News.
Bittersweet news in the radio world today. Carl Castle, a well-known voicer on NPR, has announced he will retire. Castle was a host on NPR's Morning Edition for 30 years. Then in 1998, he became the scorekeeper, judge, and voice of reason on NPR's lighthearted quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Callers who won prizes on the quiz show were offered the chance to have Castle with his seasoned radio voice record a message on their answering machine. 79-year-old Castle will retire this spring. Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City!
My name is Darlene. We're on the corner of Frederick Street and Magnolia in Burbank.
at the Handy Market. I've been coming here for years. Their Saturday barbecue is incomparable. It's delicious. Everything is excellent. The tri-tip is juicy and tender and flavorful. All of their ribs are delicious. Chicken is good. I don't wait in lines, but I'd wait in line for their barbecue. Yeah. Sonic City!
Black sheep boy, blue-eyed child.
Be sure to check out our website, annenbergradio.org, for more news on South LA. And remember to follow us on Twitter at Annenberg Radio. Hollywood producers are looking ahead to next year now that the Academy Awards have come and gone. If you missed Sunday's Oscars, 12 Years a Slave, Steve McQueen's film about slavery in the American South, took home the prize for Best Picture. It's a heavy film with strong racial and social messages. But with this year's big winner, make any lasting impact on the film industry? LA Times movie critic Kenneth Turan doesn't think so.
Hollywood is like a very big oil tanker. It takes a lot to get it to turn. It doesn't turn on a dime. And, you know, Hollywood has made socially conscious films before, and it will continue to do so, but they look not at Oscar totals, but they look at financial totals.
Turan says 12 Years a Slave did okay at the box office, but he doesn't expect to see studios taking bigger risks because of the film's recognition. To hear more of our conversation with Kenneth Turan, visit annenbergradio.org. If you thought the death of a woman in the water tank of downtown sounded like something out of a horror movie, well, you weren't the only one. The story is headed to the big screen. Canadian tourist Eliza Lamb was found dead in the Cecil Hotel's rooftop water tank last February. Her body was only discovered after hotel guests complained of low shower pressure and dirty water. Lamb's mysterious behavior leading up to her death has led to speculation about ghosts and conspiracy theories. Now we check in with Ben Capinos to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Ben.
Hi, how's it going? I know that Ukraine has been one of the top stories here for a little while now. And I know you guys talked about it earlier today, but actually tonight on ATVN, we've got a couple of Ukrainian Americans right here in L.A., and we talked to them. So tune in tonight, and you can hear their response to the crisis in their native country.
Okay, great. What else do you guys have for us?
Well, you might think the Oscars have come and gone, but we've got the story on how the award show is being preserved right here at USC.
Oh, really? Can you give us a sneak peek what you guys are going to talk about?
Well, actually, the Academy has actually reached out to USC, and they're actually partnering up, and they're over the last 50 years of the award show, we're going to preserve them right here at USC. We'll have an archive of all the different Academy Awards.
That's terrific. Anything else you got for us?
Yeah, and of course it's time for Mardi Gras in New Orleans, but the celebration is going on here in L.A. also. And tonight at 6 on ATVN, you can tune in. You can learn more about what's going on here locally.
Oh, my goodness. I bet it's a crazy scene at the bars tonight.
Yep, Fat Tuesday. It's a good night.
Terrific. Thanks so much, Ben. We'll be sure to look out for it.
Yep, thank you.
A new study out today says that Americans are still a bit technologically challenged. 11% of those surveyed thought HTML was a sexually transmitted infection. For those of you in the 11%, by the way, HTML stands for hypertext markup language. That's it for this Tuesday. Our production assistant is Lexi McAvinci. Graham Clark produces our arts and culture segment. And the newscast producer is Andy Vasoyan. Our executive producer is Catherine Davis. And for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Ani Ukar.